Coming up on Chasing the Natty, our second massive weekend of spring games for 2025 are here, and I'm bringing you what I think are the responsible takeaways from each of those games. We've got quarterback battles to settle, wide receivers potentially emerging, and in some cases, are we drafting the wrong running backs? I have all of that and more coming right after this.
Picks his way to the right and is tripped up, reaching for the end zone. Touchdown. What a start.
Give it to Reed, and there he goes. Nobody's going to catch him. Touchdown.
It's caught. Jelania Smith. Touchdown, Ohio State. The legend grows.
This is Chasing the Natty, a college fantasy football podcast.
All right, welcome in everyone. This is Jared Palmgren, host of the Chasing the Natty podcast. Hope you guys are having a wonderful ride to your work on this Monday morning. We are the College Fantasy Football Podcast on the Campus of Canton Podcast Network. You can find us on all of your podcast feeds and on YouTube every Monday morning during the off season at 6 a.m. sharp. If you want to support the great work we do here, head on over to campusofcanton.com and subscribe there with any of our phenomenal tiers. We have content ranging on all sorts of college football games, whether it's CFF, Devi, C2C, College IDP, College DFS. Really, if you play it, then we've got tools, rankings, pretty much everything you need to succeed. In fact, right now, if you want to support the show even further, make sure you sign up for one of our yearly membership tiers. You can use that promo code NATTY, N-A-T-T-Y, to get 10% off of your yearly membership. Again, that is promo code NATTY, N-A-T-T-Y. If you can't do something like that, that's totally fine. You can just show us some love by leaving a like, a comment, and a subscribe on the YouTube side of things. If you're on the podcast side of things, just leave a 5-star review wherever you can and make sure you're following the show. If you have any further questions or just want to get in touch for whatever reason, you can always find me and the show on Twitter. I am at @CFF_Jared, and the show is at Chasing the Natty. Y'all, here we are once again. A little bit more entertaining of a weekend because we actually were I know this is a crazy idea in this day and age, but we were actually able to watch some of these spring games yesterday. I know. It's as far as I know, I need to reach out to Andrew Katz and ask him if the schools that actually put on their spring game yesterday on television, places like Texas A&M, Utah, Colorado, if these guys, I should be, you know, their win totals, right? Like, I should be expecting their win totals to drop at least, like, a win or two, given the fact that that's how a lot of these coaches have been treating these spring games, that this is just opening the door for them to take extra L's this season, so... Maybe I'll reach out to Andrew Katz or Chris Kay or any of our betting buddies and figuring out what we should expect on that front. I'm totally joking. That's not how this any of this works. But again, that's how these coaches have been treating it. So maybe they're smarter than we are in the betting world are. But anyway, like I said, we got a lot of spring games to get to today. I know a lot of you are immediately going to be asking about a lot of these transfers that have been happening. We have just opened up the spring portal here on the 18th, I believe, is the day that it actually opened. It might have been the 19th. Can't remember off the top of my head. We're not going to cover that today, mostly because I want to make sure a lot of these guys actually find their respective landing spots. It's a lot easier to give you guys like true takeaways in terms of both what rooms they're leaving behind and then what rooms they're entering, when I can have all that information there. That way I don't feel like I have to repeat myself. That way I don't feel like I'm having to, you know, either make up or not make up, but like stretch some of the rumors and stuff like that of where they might be ended up going and everything. I'd rather have like definitive, concrete areas in which they're actually landing. If you want to get some initial thoughts, you can go and check out the latest Defending the Natty episode where Nate and I did actually discuss some of those transfers that had entered before the portal window had actually opened. It's so, oh my God. I should not get into a rant about tampering. But it is just so crazy how some of these guys not only entered the portal, quote unquote, before the portal window opened, but they actually already had their landing spots chosen before the portal it went, like, and they had made announcements about it. Like, it wasn't even like a oh, like, we all know where they're heading. No, it was legitimately, like, they were putting out announcements saying, like, I'm headed here, when the portal window hadn't actually even opened yet. It's just complete toothlessness by the NCAA to actually enforce any of the rules surrounding this transfer portal. I mean, these guys could probably enter the portal, really, even outside of this window, and the NCAA just probably wouldn't care whatsoever. They wouldn't enforce any of it. Anyway, as in enough negativity on my end, we got a lot to get to, but one thing I do have to touch on before we get too far into this is the incredible announcement that we as the CFF community got this past week. I had heard rumblings of this happening. I had heard, I had seen some things hinted at over and over again, and it's finally, I'm glad to see it's finally actually reached the light of day, and that is the Tadpole Bowl. And for those of you who are very confused as to what that might possibly be, if you have been in the fantasy space really at any point in time over the last couple of years, or really last decade, I'd say, I think it's his 15th year doing this, you know what the Scott Fish Bowl is. Scott Fish Bowl, for those of you who don't know, is basically a massive, massive fantasy league run by Scott Fish every year. It's a charity league. There's no like actual prize associated outside of just mega oodles amount of clout that come with it, but effectively what it is one giant league. I know like Thor runs his 50 team league for college fantasy every year, but like Scott Fish takes that to like another stratosphere with the size of league that he runs with the Scott Fish Bowl. I believe they had like 4,000 people in this one league last year, and effectively it runs like some of the underdog best ball tournaments, right, where you are placed into a pod of 12 other drafters. You only get to put in one submission. And I believe it's the top one or two out of each pod make it into the playoffs. And from there, everything gets whittled down in a giant tournament style league. And so, all that being said, we now have that for the college side. And it's not just one of us like taking the Scott Fish Bowl format and be like, oh, let's run one of these ourselves. No, Eric Froton has gone to Scott Fish and has convinced Scott Fish, God bless him, to actually run this tournament. So it is now available over on the Scott Fish Bowl website. If you have any trouble finding the sign up for it, it should be relatively easy to find. But if you can't, just reach out to me on Twitter at @CFF_Jared, and I will send you guys the link in order to sign up for it. It is going to be absolutely a ton of fun. It is going to be Power 4 only. And like I said, it'll be set up just like the pro version of the bowl. I believe Eric's goal is to have 50 pools of 12 drafters. So we're looking at about 600 entrants. If we can get 600 entrants in year one, that is going to be absolutely incredible. And I'm telling you guys right now that we want to get as many of the college people in on this as possible. We will definitely open things up to the NFL folks later on, but like all of us college nerds, and absolutely, we've worked hard. We deserve to have a chance to compete in a tournament like this. So if you're interested, reach out to me and I'll make sure that we will get you guys signed up for it. Trying to think of anything else. Oh yeah, I almost forgot about the live drafts. Yeah, and in addition to this, like most of these drafts will be held online, but there are going to be some live drafts that will get involved. I know as soon as the sign up came out, there was one set up for Las Vegas. There was one set up for Minneapolis. And now, thanks to the efforts again of Eric Froton, we are going to have one in Atlanta. So I'm excited about that. For those of you who don't know, I am based out of Atlanta. So I will be attending that one. Chris K will be attending that one. We will, if you are in the Atlanta area and you are interested in participating in that, let us know. And we are going to try to get something set up for that. So we already have a date for it, I believe, but I don't know if the official announcement's been made, so I will hold my tongue on that front. But we'll just let you know. Again, we have live drafts set up for Atlanta, have them set up for Minneapolis, Las Vegas. I do know they're working on potentially an Austin one, an Austin, Texas one, so all you Texans out there should have some representation there soon. So that's enough of me yapping. I'm almost 10 minutes into this thing. Good Lord. We've got a ton of spring games to get through here today. I believe I counted 17 that we're going to run through today. That's also part of the reason why I'm not touching on the transfer guys this week, because, guys, we got enough to talk about here. So, if y'all will allow me, I'll take a sip of water. and almost choke and die on it. God dang. Anyway, yeah, and then we'll do the exact same thing we did last week, where we're just going to go conference by conference, and we will just, and we'll just kind of run through the major takeaways for the most, not for the most part here, the takeaways that I was able to find with a lot of these. Again, as I should always do at the beginning of these spring game reports and recaps, there, you can only take so much away from these, right? It is an opportunity to confirm a lot of what you've been hearing out of spring practice ahead of time, to actually physically see some of these guys and get some eyes on these practices, at least, you know, with the beat reporters there and everything. Again, unfortunately, we can't really see a lot of these games with our own eyes anymore because of the paranoia of coaches, but AKA, like, I'll try to be reserved in some of my takeaways here, but I will say there's been quite a few interesting turnabouts here over the last couple of weeks with the way some of these spring games have gone. So I'll do my best again to give you guys some realistic, some measured takeaways here. And so, of course, the first one that I have to talk about here is going to be, there we go. There's the graphic up on the screen. Got graphics back this week. I actually had time to put them together. Let's talk about Duke. Let's talk about the Blue Devils over there. And to nobody's surprise, I think Darian Mensah is clearly your quarterback one here. Again, given the way that they paid him to come out of Tulane, it would be just absolute malpractice, in my opinion, if this wasn't going to be your starting quarterback. And here's the thing, he looked really good. He looked great on Saturday. 12 for 14 for 185 yards and 2 touchdowns. Mensah has very quickly moved into this offense. This coaching staff here at Duke has done a tremendous job of putting this offense together very quickly. They're not in a rebuild. They are retooling, as one of the beat reporters said. I can't remember exactly which one said. And that's exactly what it looks like right now. And in addition to the quarterback, it's the wide receiver room as well that looks like that, even though they are losing guys like Jordan Moore and Eli Pinkel, guys like Quayshon Brown and Samir Higgins very much look like they're going to give this offense plenty of juice for them to continue what they were doing last year, if not do better. Because as I've mentioned before, Malik Murphy was absolutely atrocious for Duke last year. I think that Mensah gives them an instant upgrade, and the receivers here are going to benefit here. Speaking of those receivers, there is one that is getting a ton of buzz here, and that is Quayshon Brown. And I was hesitant because I know that Justin Heisey from Insider CFF was drafting Quayshon early on, and I definitely liked him because Quayshon was a true freshman last year, might have been a redshirt freshman. Regardless, he's a young guy. But he looked pretty good last year, but he's playing mostly out of the slot. And given what we've seen of this offense so far, they really like their outside wide receivers. And so I was very hesitant about Brown, but nope, we saw it here. Brown is moving to the outside, and this is from Shelby Swanson from the New and Observer. Quote, if there were any questions about who would emerge as Duke's go-to weapon on the outside, Brown has answered them on Saturday and emphatically. Monster day, 6 catches, 145 yards, and a score, including a 75-yard touchdown. Very much looking, quote, every bit like the Blue Devils' clear-cut wide receiver one. Him and Mensah clearly have a connection that stands out, and very much, I would say Brown absolutely needs to be in your wide receiver rankings at this point. I haven't officially added him yet. I was going to, after the show was over here, going to kind of do my calculations, do what I need to do on that front to make sure that I have a good idea of where I'm going to put him in my rankings. But once I do, I'll probably put out a tweet about some of the guys I'm adding to my rankings here after this week. But in addition to Brown, right, like as I mentioned before, Samir Higgins, he's the number two guy out of the slot. Again, I'm a little bit more hesitant here because last year the slot guys really didn't stand out very well. Higgins himself was not very good. I think he was averaging under 10 yards per catch. But regardless, Higgins is clearly the number two guy. Duke threw the ball over 400 times last year with Malik Murphy at quarterback. I expect him to throw even more this year, given the fact that one, they no longer have Star Thomas, didn't seem like, based on any of the spring reports, that the running back room was really standing out in any way. I'm not saying Duke's going full air raid this year, but boy, do they have every incentive in the world to chuck the ball as many times as possible, given the fact that their strengths are at quarterback and wide receiver. I mean, Jordan Moore ended the regular season last year with 91 targets. Eli Pankel ended the season with 80 targets. I think we can absolutely expect both Brown and Higgins to hit those numbers again, if not a bit higher, given, like I said, the fact that the strength of this team seems to be in the passing game. I will definitely be adding both of them to my rankings. And then, like I said, no real notes about the running back situation, how they plan to replace the lost production of Star Thomas. So, sorry, Peyton Jones fans, though. That might be a little bit rough. We'll see how that evolves over time, though. Let's move on. Let's head on over to our second ACC team, our second and last ACC team here, and that is Wake Forest. And as captain of the Carlos Hernandez fan club here, him following Jake Dickert from Washington State over to Wake Forest, I was exceedingly disheartened by the fact that in none of the spring reports, in none of the spring game reports, was Carlos Hernandez really even mentioned at all. In fact, the name that kind of keeps popping up over and over again, I've seen as the weeks have gone on, is Micah Mays. And he was specifically called out by Jake Dickert during the spring showcase this past weekend, saying that Mays has revealed himself to be a downfield threat for them. Dickert has also said to reassure everybody that DC, aka Damon Claiborne, he was only taking the day off and that he is going to be carrying the ball plenty once the fall comes around. So for those of you who might have been drafting him high, worrying that maybe this offensive system isn't going to showcase Claiborne as much as he did last year, no, it seems like that this coaching staff is smart. They know where their bread is buttered here. But like I said, like, out of all these spring reports, out of all of these spring game reports, just not seeing Carlos Hernandez is certainly worrying for me. Because, again, I love this system. This Robbie Zell comes from the Major Applewhite system here, and that is a system known for highlighting a number one wide receiver, especially a guy like Carlos Hernandez, who is able to move both inside and outside the slot. But that's just not what we're seeing so far, so I'm certainly going to have to, just for good practice, move Carlos Hernandez down in my rankings. I probably have him way too high right now. Just a side note, apparently this was the best day for Deshaun Purdy in a while. He looked pretty solid on the day. Dickert has said that they're kind of narrowing it down to Purdy and Robert E. Ashford, which is kind of what a lot of us expected. But I'm sorry, I just don't see a world where Ashford is the quarterback that they go with. We've seen plenty of Ashford over the years, and while you might not trust Purdy completely, at least he's a non-zero in the passing game, unlike Ashford. So I think they end up going with Purdy. Maybe it ends up being a solid option for CFF, given the fact they play in the ACC, but we shall see. All right, moving on to the Big 12. Let me take a sip of water, and then we will head on to the next team here. All right, Houston. The Houston Cougars, what have we got out of these guys here? I would say the number one concern for the Houston Cougars for this year has to be the quarterback position. It was just an abject disaster last year between Donovan Smith and, Zion Chris. Zion Chris is the other quarterback, and just neither one of them could really get this offense going. Obviously, Kevin Barbet was the offense coordinator. He was fired before the end of the season, and you have Willie Fritz bring in Slade Nagel here to reinvent the offense that was becoming so successful at Tulane in Willie Fritz's last couple of years there. So that involves, one, having a dual threat, solid quarterback, and that's exactly what Houston's done here. They've gone and grabbed Connor Wiegman out of the portal, and Wiegman says that his body, quote, feels like the best is felt in a long time. The staff has also pointed out they specifically want Wiegman to use his legs, which is music to our ears in the CFF community. I do think that Wiegman's a solid late round option right now. Again, the staff has said they want to use his legs. We've seen this staff put together a solid season for a CFF QB before. Just have to think back to Michael Pratt. I believe his last year, he was averaging close to QB 30. And so I think Wiegman's a pretty solid QB to draft here. What about his wide receivers? The beat reporters said that the wide receiver room in general stood out, specifically guys like Kobe Young, Amari Thomas, and I can't remember if it's Steven or Stephon Johnson. But the problem is that nobody really was called out as a clear wide receiver one. And given what we've seen from from Willie Fritz and Slade Nagel in their years, spreading the ball around to different wide receivers is absolutely a part of this system. And so I do think that none of these guys are really worth drafting. But what we have seen in the past with this system is that the running back system, or the running back room, is something to target. And for a lot of us, we saw Dean Connors come into this running back room in his final year of eligibility and started thinking to ourselves, like, well, that's a really good receiving back which has done well in this Slade Nagel system before. But when it came to this spring game, it was Stacy Snead, not Dean Connors, who was leading the running backs. Definitely something to kind of figure out for us over the next couple of weeks, because Connors is currently going as RB45 in drafts. That puts him around, you know, I'd say late single digit rounds, so like round 8, 9, 10. I've seen it go as high as, like, you know, the top 5, 6 rounds. That's already concerning if you're drafting Dean Connors quite a bit, that it seems like Stacy Snead is still in the lead for this running back room. And even still, like I mentioned before, like, we want to go back to that Slade Nagel system where, you know, guys like, oh my goodness, why am I thinking of forgetting the Tulane back? Not Mekhi Hughes, obviously, but the guy before that. Oh my goodness. Give me a second, y'all. I am, like, brain farting so hard over here as to who some of those great backs were. There were two of them. There were two of them. Come on, Jared. 2022. Tyjae Spears, oh my god. Yeah, go back to that Tyjae Spears years, right, where you have, you know, the clear number one back, getting oodles of volume there. But I just don't think we're going to get that this year, based on what I'm seeing. One, Stacy Snead is not a guy that I love, just as a talent, and if he's still leading this room, even over the likes of Dean Connors, that tells me what the ceiling of all these backs kind of looks like in the eyes of this coach. And they also keep describing this room as deep, which tells me that they view a lot of these guys as roughly on the same level. So definitely concerned about the Houston running back room and investing in that going forward. So we shall definitely see. I definitely think right now that Dean Connors, though, is going too high in drafts. So let's move on. Let's head on over to another Big 12 team here. Let's touch on Texas Tech, where we had quite a few of our starters out. Obviously, Baron Morton's been out all spring. He is your QB1 there. We don't have to worry about Mitch Griffiths or anything like that taking the job from him. That's a joke. Mitch Griffiths would never take the job from either Baron Morton or Will Hammond. But we are also missing, I think, all three of the starting wide receivers here, with Caleb Douglas, Coy Eakin, and Reggie Virgil. Caleb Douglas is out. It doesn't seem like it is anything super worrisome. He just has a hyperextension and a bone bruise on his knee. Coy Eakin has some issues going on with his back. Although Coy Eakin, by the way, side note, did win the Most Improved Offensive Player Award. And given the fact that he will be playing in the slot for Texas Tech, and that is typically where we've seen Matt Leftwich target, I think personally Eakin's my... Let's see, is he rated as my highest in my... Texas Tech, he's wide receiver 56 for me. I think Caleb Douglas is a little bit too high for sure then. So, there's Caleb Douglas, he's wide receiver 44. I'll probably be moving Coy Eakin up a little bit in my rankings, at least to get him ahead of Caleb Douglas, and then probably move Caleb Douglas down there. And then there's Reggie Virgil, who's really the wild card out of all these guys. Very much a deep threat option. could end up being really, really solid for this Texas Tech team, but could absolutely be a boomer bust kind of guy, given the fact that, again, he's going to be getting a lot of those high ADOT targets, which if he does catch them, great. If he doesn't, he only has so many opportunities per game to really get you what you need for CFF purposes. The running back room is obviously another area where a lot of people have been looking. And unfortunately, from the spring game here, there's not really that much to take away from the running back room. Quentin Joyner and Cameron Dickey scored touchdowns. There was really almost no mention of Jacoby Williams, which I thought was kind of interesting. And then for those of you who are looking for tight ends, Terrence Carter did score a touchdown in this game. I do think he'll be pretty involved in this offense going into the season, even though we haven't really seen much of that with Matt Leftwich. Texas Tech went out and grabbed Terrence Carter from the G5. I think they'll absolutely be using him. So, yeah, that's pretty much all I got with Texas Tech. Again, a little bit hard to get any true takeaways, given the fact that most of your starters were out. But that was not the case, though, with Utah here. So give me a second to head on over to here. Get a sip of water. And let's continue on here. So Utah was kind of an interesting start, right? The offense did not look great in the first half, and everybody kind of started slow, but then things really picked up in the second half when Devin Dampier really started to find his footing here. Dampier has been described by the coaching staff as a bona fide leader and really just another coach on the field by Kyle Whittingham, considering how much Devin Dampier knows this system. And so, obviously, Devin Dampier will be your starting quarterback for Utah here. There's been some discrepancies based on the coaching, the beat reporters in terms of how much production Devin Dampier got out of this game. But according to one, they had him at 250 yards passing, 2 touchdowns to the air, along with 50 yards on the ground. And then another beat reporter had him at only 204 yards with 32 yards on the ground with those same 2 touchdowns. But regardless, like, for a spring game, that's pretty solid production all around. I think the first half of the game, from what we can tell from the beat reporters and everything, the Utah receiving room was dealing with a lot of drops, and that was a big part of why the offense really could not get going in that first half, and things started to pick up. Speaking of those receivers, there is one who is starting to stand out here. No, it is none of the transfers, surprisingly. Not Otto Tia, not Ryan Davis, not Creed Whittemore. It is Zacharias Williams, who is, I believe, a true freshman last year. I believe he was a true freshman last year, going into his second year with the Utes here. He looked like he had the best day for wide receivers. He had himself a really, really nice catch from Devin Dampier. I think within the 5-yard line, it was a really thread-the-needle kind of throw from Dampier. It was a really, really nice play. Williams finished with about 80 to 90 yards. Again, it's a little disagreed upon exactly what his stats were upon the day. Utah has not released any official stats, but he's looking like the main guy. It's kind of difficult, though, to know whether or not this is a true CFF play or not, because what we have seen from Jason Eck is that he does typically prefer the slot as his main guy. And Zacharias Williams is absolutely a guy who's playing on the outside. I think he's like 6'2", almost 200 pounds. Not a guy at all that you would really stick in the slot based on what we've seen. Based on what we've seen both last year and this year for Williams in terms of the spring game, he was absolutely being placed on the outside, not really moved to the slot. But I also wonder if Eck has only been targeting the slot because that just happens to be where his best receivers have been. I mean, take a look at what he had to work with at New Mexico last year, right? Like, Luke Weisong was clearly the best wide receiver they had, and he just happened to be in the slot. So we'll definitely see. I'm probably going to add Zacharias Williams to my rankings because we do know that the wide receiver one for Jason Eck over the last couple of years has been targeted quite heavily. And so I do think him being on the outside might actually help that a little bit more. It's just, I don't know if he'll get that same volume ceiling we've seen. I just realized I'm not really making a lot of sense here. Basically, with Williams, he might not hit that 100 target threshold that I love, but him playing on the outside there, right, I do think he can get to like 80, 90. And with him playing on the outside, he'll have some of those higher value targets, like deeper targets. And so I think that should be more than enough to make up for it. And hopefully, for the love of God, Jason Eck will get his number one wide receiver more than one touchdown, unlike Luke Weisong last year. But it is abundantly clear, though, that Utah is going to target another wide receiver here in the spring portal. As I mentioned before, in the spring game, they dealt with drops. It sounds like that's been a chronic issue for them this spring. And speak and he shall appear. Micah Hudson, who is transferred out of Texas A&M, is visiting with Utah and very much fits exactly what Utah is looking for to fill that need. Hudson could play on the outside opposite of Williams, or he can move into that uber productive slot position, in which case I probably would target Micah Hudson over Williams, but we shall see. Running back, Wayshon Parker did not play. Nakari Rogers played the most. He looks like a pretty solid number two option out there. Rogers had like a really weird quote though, where he was saying like we've got a workhorse. You've got me, Wayshon, Devin, everybody. Everybody's equal. Anybody can start the game. You know, keep pushing. Rogers, I don't know how to say this, buddy, but I don't know what kind of if this is the lies you're telling yourself at night to make it feel like that you're contributing, I will pat you on the head and send you on your way. Dude, Wayshon Parker was held out of this game because they were afraid of injuring him. He is going to be the workhorse back, buddy. There's no equality here in this backfield. Parker was especially singled out, saying like, hey, we cannot risk injuring this guy. So speaking of other guys that set out, Dallin Bentley, it seems like, is your starter at tight end. He was held out along with Parker to kind of avoid injury. That tells me they plan to use him in the fall. The problem is that Bentley's really been more of a blocking tight end in the past rather than, you know, a receiving option. So maybe that changes this year. Who knows? Let's move on over to Colorado here, where we got a bit of a surprise to start the game off immediately. I don't know if this is Dion playing games or whatever, but it was true freshman Julian Lewis who got the first snaps at quarterback, and this quarterback competition is being described as very close between him and Liberty transfer Kadon Salter. Now, the problem is both quarterbacks kind of struggled on the game. Lewis was very much relying on checkdowns for his completion. Meanwhile, Salter actually had a lot of the same struggles, but when he was good, he was better, right? He had the better passes on the day when he did complete them. Charlie Strella said that with DNVR, I believe is the program that he works with. He said that despite the order in which these quarterbacks played, he believes that if the season started tomorrow, Salter would be QB1. And given what we saw on the day, it does seem like that's exactly what you would expect. Although, again, the one thing that it does seem like that can be agreed upon between all of the beat writers is that it seems like that the downfield passing attack that we have been known Colorado for the last couple of years between Shador, Travis Hunter, and all those receivers, right? It seems like that's going to be, if not missing, definitely heavily reduced compared to the last couple of years. So that definitely worries me in terms of the ceiling we could see from some of these fantasy options here at Colorado, but we'll definitely see. Speaking of fantasy options, it seems that Tulsa transfer Joseph Williams has been the highlight at receiver. It looks like Williams and the Miller duo between Draylon and Omarion will be your starting trio, in my opinion. Although Williams did not start with the first team here, that was Cam McKell, Draylon Miller, and Terrell Timmons. It seems like if he keeps going on the way that he is, there's no way they're going to be able to keep him off the field. Omarion Miller, who is my preferred receiver in this Colorado room right now, he did not play on Saturday. And Williams, all over the day, quote, made highlight reel plays as he looks like someone who could be the go-to target for the eventual starting quarterback. The value of these guys in drafts is interesting, right? Because Joseph Williams is being drafted as wide receiver 30 for CFF, according to CFF ADP. Meanwhile, Draylen Miller and Amari Miller are guys that have been with Colorado for the last 2 years. They're getting discounts of wide receiver 72 and 84, respectively. So I've been big on, like, hey, let's just grab Amari Miller later. He's playing on that outside role that the system seems to love. He's got incredible efficiency the last couple of years. I think he's the guy to target. He's definitely started moving up in draft since then, but it may all be moot because maybe the people who were drafting Joseph Williams from the beginning might have been correct, because, again, he's just been absolutely on fire during the spring game and might be making me eat my words. Specifically, since we've gotten the quote directly from Kaydon Salter saying, quote, he's going to be a special receiver for us this year. He's going to show the world and make a name for himself. So we'll definitely see. I will say that another guy that kind of stood out was tight end Zach Atkins. He is, quote, expected to be a focal point of the offense, according to Scott Proctor of the DNVR, which is kind of interesting, right? Because, like, Pat Shurmur, or the last couple of years, Colorado has not really been utilizing the tight end very much. I know they had Michael Harrison in Deion's first year, but he was very much more of a receiver. Granted, Atkins fits that role a little bit as well, but he seems to be lining up exactly at tight end rather than, you know, just being a glorified large slot. So just a name to file away there. And then something to keep an eye out for is that Deion does seem like he is looking for some skill position guys in the portal. He specifically said, quote, I'm looking for a grown man receiver and, quote, a couple of running backs. So we'll see what Deion's able to pull out there. Let's move on to our next team here, and that'll be the Arizona Wildcats. Let me take a sip of water here, and then we'll keep going. So before I get too far with Arizona, I do want to say God bless Justin Spears of Tucson.com. He is the only Arizona beat reporter that actually put out a report for the Wildcats and their spring game here. And quite frankly, he gave me exactly what I wanted to see right up front. He just listed a starting lineup. And that starting lineup is, to no surprise, Nova Vita. At running back is where things instantly get interesting, because it was Kedrick Riscano, the former Ole Miss running back, who is getting the first team reps at running back over the likes of Ishmael Mahdi. Your starting three wide receivers, though, are Trey Spivey III, Chris Hunter, and Chris Hudson, the former Washington State wide receiver there. It seems like Hunter and Spivey III are your outside wide receivers, while Hudson is chilling there in the slot. We'll start with Riscano there at the running back position. Riscano over Ishmael Mahdi is certainly worrisome for those of you who have been taking Mahdi as, you know, RB 60 in drafts around the 14th round on average. Meanwhile, Riscano is being drafted super late, right? RB 127, 28th round. I think we got the wrong guy here, y'all. Riscano's been with this staff. This is his second year with the team. Ishmael Mahdi's coming up from the G5 to the Power 4. You guys know I'm already not a huge fan of that. I've replaced Mahdi with Riscano in my rankings. I'm not touching Mahdi right now. I think that Riscano, if there's going to be any value from this backfield at Arizona, Riscano's going to be the guy this year. We'll see what Mahdi's able to do. The wide receivers are also interesting because if you look at our ADP, the highest drafted wide receiver for Arizona this year is Luke Weisong, who is being drafted as wide receiver 70 in like the 21st round. So it's not like any of these guys are going super high, right? But like Weisong wasn't even listed in the starting lineup in the spring game. Meanwhile, Chris Hudson, who's being drafted as wide receiver 101 in like the 25th round, Chris Hunter is not even, who's replacing Tet McMillan on the outside. He's going undrafted. Trey Spivey III, I don't really love that talent. I kind of like Chris Hunter a bit, but like Trey Spivey III is going undrafted. He's free 99. It's going to be interesting to see kind of how this plays out over the next, like during the fall and everything. I couldn't get any information from Arizona, unlike some of these other teams, about who was kind of being held out for injuries, who's not. Because that could definitely change things, right? Because like maybe Luke Weisong was being held out. Maybe he was a guy that they were going to put on the outside. I don't know. Maybe Ishmael Mahdi was going to be RB1, but he's out for injury. I don't know. But for right now, I think it makes all the sense in the world to check out Riscano. And I think it's absolutely worth not going after Luke Weisong anymore until we get any kind of confirmation that he has entered the starting lineup. So that's the Big 12. We got a couple of Big 10 teams to work through here. Let's talk about Indiana. Mendoza had himself a nice day. 10 for 14, 123 yards, two touchdowns. Hoosier State of Mind went as far to say that they think he might actually be an upgrade over Curtis Rourke, which is they're specifically highlighting that Mendoza has a legitimate dual threat ability versus when Rourke was running, they were kind of trying to fit a square peg in a round hole. So that could be definitely interesting for a lot of you guys who've been drafting Mendoza. I mean, if I look at last year, right, where did Rourke end up? He ended up as QB 50. But if I remember correctly, there was a point in the season where he was as high as, where are you? He was as high as QB 36. So he kind of fell off towards the end of the season. If we're looking at that plus, then Mendoza is going at a really, really nice value right now. Where's Mendoza going? I should have written this down. QB 45. Yeah, that's actually a pretty fair value. I don't have him ranked that high, but yeah, no, I think that's pretty fine, actually. Forget everything I said. Mendoza's a good value at where he's at right now. But unfortunately, if any of you were hoping for a change at running back and how this team will handle the running back position moving forward under Kurt Cignetti, be prepared to be disappointed. It's a clear running back by committee between Kalen Black, Roman Hemby, and Lee Beebe. Kirk Cignetti, man, Nate, if you're listening, man, I need you to come up with a new moniker, right? You have your CFF Kingmakers at the different positions, but I need a moniker for guys that just kill values of really good players. Because like Roman Hemby, Lee Beebe, if they were smarter about where they went, they could have been excellent values for CFF, but they decided to come to Indiana and their value's been killed. Think of like James Franklin with Penn State wide receivers in recent years, or just Michigan wide receivers or Georgia wide receivers. Like, I need a moniker, Nate. I need you working on that for me, okay? Speaking of receivers at Indiana, obviously Elijah Surratt is our guy, but a name to kind of watch out for is LeBron Bond, who is a true freshman, and he is actually projected to start at the slot wide receiver for Indiana. Now, I'd be more excited about that if the slot position is where we've seen Kirk Cignetti and his offense do well over the last couple of years. But unfortunately, it's really been those outside guys like Elijah Surratt that have gotten the most love. And so maybe LeBron Bond moves to the outside. I doubt it. I think that was a burp. If I remember correctly, Bond's pretty tiny. And so I don't think he's going to really be moving to the outside. If I remember correctly, he's 175 pounds. Let me double check that. Let me make sure I'm not talking out of my butt here. LeBron Bond, 247. There we go. Yeah, he was listed at, 5'9", 175. This man is never going on the outside. So maybe I need to pour cold water. Maybe I should not even mention him at all. But it is always fun when the freshman gets a start, so. Let's keep it in the Big Ten here. Let's move on over to Michigan, where we got our first real good look at freshman phenom Bryce Underwood. Speaking of freshmen, Underwood had himself, if you look at the stat sheet, it makes it look like he had a pretty okay day. But from what I can tell, he kind of struggled, right? He was 12 for 26 for 187 yards on the day and a touchdown interception, almost threw another interception. And 88 yards out of his 187 yards came on the final play of the spring game on an end-around flea flicker within, like, his own 20 or his own 15, which is something you never call in a real game. And that's how we got his touchdown and 88 yards of his production. So if you take that away, which was, like, again, literally the last play of the game, he would have finished the day 11 for 25 for 99 yards, which is far less impressive. Now, I'm not sitting here saying that, like, oh, we need to dunk on the five-star quarterback freshman here, right? But, like, you know, again, the stats make it look like he did better than he actually did. The good news for Underwood is that his competition ain't doing much better. One, Mikey Keene's not even playing. And then Jaden Davis, good Lord, man. 6 for 17 for 74 yards and two interceptions. Dude was just chucking it all over the place and was not hitting much. So, yeah, Underwood's going to be the quarterback for Michigan. There's no way Mikey Keene misses out on all the spring and then they still convince himself like, eh, let's throw him out there. Underwood. Yeah, the staff says that this quarterback battle is still ongoing. I don't think they're fooling anybody. Underwood will be the guy come week one. Running backs, pretty interesting here. Justice Haynes looked really good here, going 51 yards on 6 carries. He is supposedly competing with Jordan Marshall to be the RB1, although Marshall did not have a great day here, going 6 carries for just 9 yards, which is... You couldn't have asked for a bigger difference between these two, at least for this day. But given what we've heard from the staff, they very much sound like a 1A, 1B combination, which, if you look at their ADP, is probably something we need to reconsider when it comes to drafting, because Justice Haynes is going as RB17 in, like, the third round, and Jordan Marshall is going, like, RB82 in, like, the 21st round. I do think he's moving up recently, but even still, like, the gap between those two probably needs to shrink just a little bit more. But it may not end up mattering, right? Because given what we've seen from Michigan in the spring game, what we've seen from Michigan over the last couple of years is that they love to run the ball. And both of these guys could end up being key pieces for Michigan's rushing attack this year. Some of you might be groaning because that sounds a lot like what we got last year. But I think people need to forget about last year a little bit with this Michigan offense, because good Lord, they just straight up did not have quarterback play last year. Alex Orji is literally a negative when it comes to the passing game. So the opponents of Michigan, except for Ohio State, were all of them were able to key in on the run. If Underwood is just serviceable this year, if he puts up stats like he did in this spring game, that'll open up opportunities in the run game that we never even saw last year. And I think that'll allow guys like Justice Haynes and Jordan Marshall to be a really good duo for Michigan coming in here. And I think it could make it to where both of them could end up having some CFF relevancy. Do I even discuss the wide receivers for Michigan, considering that we haven't really had anything out of Michigan with wide receivers over the last couple of years? No? Yeah, we'll move on. Shout out to Jalen Hoffman, by the way, the fullback slash tight end who was a surprising MVP in this game. He had 7 catches for 148 yards and the single touchdown there at the end of the game. I have zero clue if that means anything for the actual season. This smells like a spring game warrior kind of performance here, but you know what, Mr. Hoffman, hats off to you. Let's hit up our last Big Ten team here, and let's hit up Wisconsin. And the major takeaway I had everything to do with the running back room. Obviously, Billy Edwards is your starting quarterback. Meanwhile, Danny O'Neill is there in the QB2 spot. But the running back position is definitely the thing I am most interested in and worried about, because I'm a big fan of Darian Dupree. Given the fact that he got a ton of run last year from this Wisconsin staff, I figured that he would be just lined right up to be the RB1 for Wisconsin this year. Given what we've seen out of, oh my gosh, why am I blanking on his name? The offensive coordinator, Jeff Grimes. Jeff Grimes has been an RB1 kingmaker for CFF over the last couple of years, and I thought Darian Dupree would line right up into that. Well, Dupree is out with a leg injury that he sustained about 2/3 of the way through the practice. And with his absence, it seems like that Dylan Jones, who was brought in with the same class as Darian Dupree, he seems to be taking advantage of that, to the point where Donnie Slusher thinks that, a Wisconsin beat reporter, by the way, I probably should say that, otherwise you're asking me, who the hell is Donnie Slusher? Donnie Slusher is a beat reporter for Wisconsin, and he says he thinks that Jones right now might be the odds-on favorite to be the RB1, which is crazy to me, considering, like, again, they gave Dupree so much more run than him last year. But here he is. He's getting a ton of hype. Quote from Slusher, running back Dylan Jones has been a standout all spring with his mix of speed and vision and with the ball in his hands. That momentum translated to Saturday's outing where he set the tone for the Wisconsin's ground game. So, yeah, I mean, I think I gotta be careful. Like, this is definitely not great for any of my shares of Darian Dupree. He's been going in the middle rounds on average, going even higher in recent drafts. I think I got to pull back on that a little bit and draft Dylan Jones, who's going way, way later. I definitely think this is a handcuff situation just to kind of be safe from all of these. So Also, I made a mistake. That quote from the Wisconsin beat reporter I made about Dylan Johnson came from Payne Blazevich from 247 Sports. So I just want to make sure I get my credit correct there. But yeah, other than that, like, nothing really stood out from Wisconsin. None of the receivers really made a name for themselves. The RB is the place or the thing that I want in this Jeff Grimes offense. So I'm spending a lot of time trying to figure out exactly what to expect there between Dylan Jones and Darian Dupree. So I take your shot on your guys. And if you're right, you could end up getting a really, really nice CFF running back here late in your draft. Let's keep moving on. Let's hit up the SEC here. Not too much to take away here from South Carolina. One thing that really stood out to me, it seems like the offensive line is still kind of giving the team some issues right now, which is definitely not what you want to hear for a guy like, you know, Lenore Sellers, who's a top 1-2 quarterback in drafts. I'm interested in Rasul Faison. What am I talking about? I'm getting tired, y'all. I don't know what's wrong with me. But like Rasul Faison and Matthew Fuller are two guys I'm interested in running back. And obviously if they're running behind an offensive line, that's not too great. But we did also see Raheem Sanders kind of resurge into this offense last year. So maybe I'm not too worried about it. Again, Faison's going to 15th roundish range. I think that's perfectly fine. We couldn't really take too much away from the receiving room, considering that both of the major targets we're kind of expecting for South Carolina this year between Mazio Bennett and Michael Smith, they were both out for this game. So, and with none of the other wide receivers really standing out, not much you can take away there. One thing that is kind of interesting for dynasty players out there is that freshman quarterback Cutter Woods looked really solid. Went 6-for-13 for 120 yards in this game. And there's a possibility that he actually might solidify the backup spot over Aaron Noland, who went 9-for-16 for 67 yards and an interception. Then you also have Luke Doty, who's still around. He actually had himself a really nice day, 10-for-12 for 85 yards and a touchdown. Those three are all competing for that backup spot behind Lenora Sellers. 100% is a dynasty play if you look at any of those guys. So, again, not much in terms of takeaways for South Carolina there. What about Texas A&M? There's solid takeaways here, but not many of them. I'm running low on steam here, y'all. I'm trying to figure out exactly how to say this. I think that there are some solid takeaways you can take away from Texas A&M here. There's just not many of them. Marcel Reed, I think, is one of the takeaways here, and the fact that he looked pretty dang comfortable, and I do think you should expect him to improve here as the signal caller for Texas A&M in his second year. He had himself a pretty nice day, going 18-for-28 for 213 yards and a touchdown with only one interception there. That, based on the beat reporters, very much was a mistake. Quickly moved on from it. Something that is definitely interesting is that there seems to be a clear starting lineup of wide receivers here between Mario Craver from Mississippi State, Casey Concepcion from NC State, and then obviously Terry Busey, the athlete turned running back turned wide receiver for Texas A&M. Concepcion finished the day with 7 catches for 64 yards. Craver led the team in receiving, going 78 yards on 5 catches. If this team can kind of make it to where this is your constant 3 wide receivers out on the field, this could make Texas A&M a little bit more interesting than what I kind of gave it credit for when it came to the possibility of a CFF level wide receiver here. Now, I'm still a little concerned about Kevin Concepcion. I still think that even if he gets the volume, he's just not a super efficient wide receiver. So meanwhile, Craver playing on the outside there, I think could definitely put himself in a better position too. If they do end up throwing the ball around a lot more this year, he can end up being a pretty solid CFF option, but I'm not really looking to draft either one of them. I think Kevin Concepcion's going way too high. Where is Kevin Concepcion going right now? Where are you, Casey? Where are you? There you are. Wide receiver 35. Yeah, absolutely not. Absolutely not for me. All right, let's move on from the SEC and let's touch on some Group of Five teams here. Let me get a swig of water. I'm slowly losing my mind here, y'all. Forgive me. All right. Let's touch on Tulane here. And the consistent theme of the day, one, was the defense one. This offense definitely needs some work, and a lot of that has to do with the quarterback battle that is still ongoing. We did see that Tulane did, one, reach out to Nico Iamaliava and then eventually reject the help of one Nico Iamaliava. So that still leaves them down between Ball State transfer Caden Somoza and Illinois transfer Donovan Leary. It doesn't seem like either one of them are really making a huge leap. It doesn't really seem like any of them are really kind of standing out as a guy that's really taking this job by the reins. And it sounds like that Summerall is being very clear about the fact that they do plan to add another quarterback to this competition. Obviously, TJ Finley's dealing with his legal issues, so that's part of what kind of kickstarted that. That made it to where Somoza and Leary are actually now the only two scholarship quarterbacks on the roster, if you don't include, you know, Ty Thompson, who's moving to tight end. But even still, it sounds like that Tulane will be adding a quarterback out of this portal. Again, that makes sense. They already reached out to Iamaliava. The other position that we're kind of looking out for here is the running back room. We have seen with Summerall that, you know, wide receivers aren't really much worth looking out for, but he does love to run himself a single back. But unfortunately, we didn't really get a ton out of the running back room, although it was said that the only reason why Somoza and Leary found any kind of success on offense was when Jamori McClure was starting to find his groove. And Jamori McClure was specifically called out by Summerall as one of the guys, one of the young guys specifically, that he is looking for them to kind of take that next step. I think that as much as I like Arnold Barnes, I think that this staff views McClure as the kind of guy that if he can take that next step, he absolutely could be the likes of like a Mekhi Hughes, right? So definitely something to keep an eye out for. I like Arnold Barnes. I've still been drafting him, but I'm probably going to move McClure into my rankings as well as somebody to draft along with Barnes. I think one of them will end up being the RB1 for Tulane this year. So let's move on from Tulane. Let's hit up Charlotte here real quick. Oh, not Charlotte. Oh, forgot to make that graphic. That's fine. I'll touch on Charlotte here real quick. We'll finish up the AAC teams here. And if you guys listened a couple weeks ago when I talked about Tim Albin coming over to Charlotte and what things I'm looking for, the thing I keyed in on were two things: the quarterback room and the running back room. I think the wide receiver room is, one, a little overrated in terms of how much people spend time looking at it. But two, there's nobody really in this wide receiver room that stands out to me as a guy that I'm really willing to go after. Quarterback and wide receiver are two different stories, right? I have had Connor Harrell in my rankings, and from what we can tell here, he did get the first snaps at quarterback here. It seems like the quarterback competition is down between him and Grayson Loftus. I really am hoping that Harrell wins this job because he very much fits the style of quarterback that Tim Albin has had a ton of success with over the years, versus Loftus is very much a pocket passer that doesn't really run much, very much strikes me as, you know, at his ceiling is Curtis Rourke, his floor a lot lower than that. But we did get some really good breakdowns from Hunter Bailey over at the Charlotte Observer. Quote on Harrell, that Harrell is among the team's best athletes and can pull the ball down and run at any time. Saturday showed he could also stand in the pocket and kind of work his through progressions, completing 6 of his 10 attempts, which featured curls, screens, and checkdowns. He did note that almost all of Harrell's attempts were within 10 yards of the line of scrimmage, which is very much does kind of point to the fact that we're not going to see Harrell kind of bombing down the field. I'm still hoping that Harrell wins this job. I think he could end up being a really solid DFF asset there in the AAC. And then, as I mentioned, quarterbacks I'm looking at, and then running back is the other position I'm looking at for here at Charlotte, given the success we've seen with Tim Albin over the last couple of years. And my boy, Donald Chaney Jr., the former Louisville and Miami running back, did get the first reps at running back, and it sounds like that he will be the RB1 moving forward for Charlotte, so I have emphatically put him into my RB rankings and am aggressively drafting him right now. So that's it for the AAC. We'll touch on two MAC teams here real quick. We'll go through Ohio real quick because there wasn't actually much on the actual Ohio game, but there was a picture that was put out onto Twitter that has made a lot of us very worrisome, and that is the fact that running back Saya Bengura was seen on crutches during this spring game, and it's not really known if this is a serious injury, if this is something not to worry about for the fall. It's hard to get any kind of information out of these beat reporters. I'm sure that I'll be quickly tuning into the Worker Bee series over at the G5 Hive. Hopefully they hit up Ohio pretty early on so we can kind of figure out what exactly is going on there. But yeah, again, we didn't get much from the actual spring game, but in terms of how this impacts Saya Bengura, I think you definitely have to bump him down a little bit on your rankings just because of the unknown factor there right now, which is really unfortunate because as the joke I made in our Slack when this news came out, I have legitimately no idea who Ohio could replace with him at running back. I know I discussed haphazardly a couple weeks ago that like maybe Bengura, we're assuming too much with him being the RB1, but I fully admitted in that segment that like I have no clue who could actually take this RB1 job over Bengura. There's just not much there with Ohio. So, but definitely something to keep an eye out on there. And then now let's get to the graphic or the team that's actually on the graphic, and that's Buffalo. They had their spring game. The rushing attack seemed pretty solid, although defense was certainly winning the day for the most part. And a lot of that had to do with the offensive line, which is struggling, which is kind of surprising because they are returning three starters from last year. So definitely worrisome there. The other name I kind of want to throw out here is former Penn State, former Kansas State, former UConn transfer, Taquan Roberson. Is it Taquan? Taquan Roberson? I'm not sure. Seems like he's your starter here, right? He went 10 for 17 on the day for 62 yards, which is obviously not great. Like I said, the defense mostly won on the day. But even still, it's something to keep an eye on because he's a dual threat guy. And one thing that I do think a lot of people forget last year is that CJ Agabana finished as a top 40 quarterback on the season and was actually a top 6 quarterback the second half of the season, which, again, I'm not saying that's what Roberson's going to do, but there's a ceiling with this offense, especially with a dual threat quarterback that we could be kind of missing here. So I think, you know, if you're looking for like a last couple round flyer at quarterback, I mean, I think you could do a lot worse than Taquan Roberson here at Buffalo, but that's just something I'm kind of throwing out there. All right, how many more teams we got to get through? I think we got two more major teams and then two teams that we gotta just run through real quick there at the end, but let's hit up New Mexico. Obviously, this is a team that got absolutely destroyed from the coaching changes, from the transfer portal. They got like nothing left. They bring in Jason Eck from Idaho, the former head coach there. And the spring game just straight up did not go as I expected. And here's the main reason why. Consistently, what I saw from all the beat reporters was New Mexico's defense outplayed the offense. For those of you that remember, New Mexico's defense was bottom 4 in the FBS last year. That terrible defense only returns about 28.9% of their defensive production. So what little production they had, they've lost most of it, and now they're starting even greener than they were last year. That should be a defense that anyone can carve through. The fact that this offense is struggling to put up points against that tells me that this offense legitimately might be horrendous. Now, granted, they are without Jack Lane, who is the expected starting quarterback for New Mexico. He's been missing all spring with an elbow injury, but neither the other two quarterback options strike much confidence. If Lane misses any portion of the season, this is trouble. This might be bad. And normally I would kind of dismiss this and be like, oh, well, none of these guys are really getting drafted that high anyway. But like Keegan Johnson, again, he was a guy that I like. And trust me, I like the system with Jason Eck and how consistent he's been with his top receivers. But one, Keegan Johnson's not been mentioned in really any of these practice reports. So really no wide receiver has been. So that's certainly worrisome. But then Scottrey Humphrey, right? Like, he's been drafted pretty decently highly, and I've already said that I'm worried about a committee situation here, given the fact they brought in a guy like Buchanan over from Idaho, and I think there's another name here. DJ McKinney from Sam Houston State is hanging around here as well. I think they end up doing a committee style, but all this pales in comparison to the fact that I think this offense just might legitimately be atrocious. And that's a huge problem for anybody drafting. I might end up blackballing this team for CFF and just avoid all these guys altogether. So we'll certainly see. Last major team we'll discuss here is Boise State. And we'll be discussing the room that everybody wants to discuss. And that is the running back room, which is just insanely stacked, which is crazy for a team that just lost Ashton Diente, who's probably, or not probably, who will be a first round pick in the NFL draft. They've got Malik Sherrod, they got Jonbre Dubar, they got Dylan Riley, not to mention Sire Gaines, like tons of options in this backfield. Riley and Dubar led the game in touches, but it was actually Malik Sherrod who ended up leading in yardage. I believe Dubar and Riley both ended up getting 9 carries in this game. Yes, they did. Dubar ended with 9 carries for 41 yards. Riley ended the game 9 carries for 20 yards and 2 touchdowns. Sherrod was the standout here, right? He only had 3 touches on the day, but he finished the game with 76 yards. Most of his production came when he ripped off a 65-yard touchdown run on the very first drive of the game. Now, this all begs the question of what do we do with Sire Gaines, right? Sire Gaines, in my opinion, is the most talented back out of this backfield. He was great in the limited exposure we saw him last year. I think he's one of the most talented backs of this backfield. I also happen to think he's one of the biggest early round landmines in CFF this year. Gaines is currently going as RB20 in the 4th round. To me, that is a crazy price to pay for a guy that's in a room as talented as this, even though we have seen plenty of great running backs for CFF from Boise State the last couple of years. We now know that this running back room is certainly going to be more split up than what we got with Ashton Diente last year. Also, Gaines has been injured for most of, if not all, of spring. Like, that, it's hard to sit there and say, like, yeah, a guy that's been going round four that has been missing all the spring is absolutely worth it. Again, especially in a room where they have other options. Meanwhile, Malik Sherrod's going in like the 14th, 15th round. Dubar and Dylan Riley are free 99 right now. I still maintain, as much as the staff says, like, oh, we're going to be like more 50-50 with rushing versus passing this year compared to last year, I don't think that's what's going to happen. They don't have the receivers to support a passing game like that. I think they're going to continue to push where they have the strength, and that is their rushing attack. And so that makes me think that there's still potential for two running backs to be relevant in this system. The problem is, as each day goes by, I think that Gaines will be less and less likely to be one of those two backs, which sucks because, again, I like him as a talent. But I really don't think Boise, with the talent they have at running back, they have any incentive to rush Gaines back and risk re-injuring him, right? Now, granted, again, this might all change in the fall, right? We have 3 injury-prone running backs here between Dubar, between Gaines, and Sherrod. Any one of those guys could go down in the fall, and that opens up the opportunity for the others to take over from there. Right, but for right now, I think that this running back room, especially if you're taking the highest guy off the board, which currently is Sire Gaines, I think you're playing a dangerous game, and that could end up being Sherrod here over the next couple of months as people realize, like, he's probably got the best shot at being RB1 if there is an RB1 to be had in this system right now. So we will definitely see, definitely a room worth keeping an eye on as the summer and the fall goes along. All right. We'll finish up with these last two teams here. There's not really much to take away here. We got Oregon State. We got Old Dominion. Oregon State, the offense looked ugly. The offensive line continues to have issues that were stemming from their late season production last year. The D-line was able to get home on Murphy all day long. They only had 1 touchdown during the scrimmage during it. Yeah, Oregon State's going to have to rely on their running game, it seems like. Again, the passing game just doesn't seem like it's there for them. They don't have the O-line. They definitely don't have the quarterback. I don't think Blake Murphy is going to be a guy that'll be able to lift this passing game up. And, you know, as bad as the offense looked, Anthony Hankerson did not suit up for this. And doesn't seem like Salahuddin Allah did much either, which is kind of concerning on that front. But maybe they have to ride on Hankerson. Maybe that'll be end up being a good thing for Hankerson owners. But I am really concerned about this offense a little bit. And then the last thing we'll discuss here is Old Dominion. Not really much we could get out of beat reporters, but lucky for us, we have Mr. Justice, who is from the G5 Hive and our resident IDP expert here at Campus of Canton. He was on the ground for his spring game, and his takeaways are the following. One, Colton Joseph looked great, as you'd expect, and he has a very talented core of receivers around him, which should help him be even more productive than he was last year. But according to Justice, he thinks that the fact that the pool of receivers is so talented around him that he believes that the ball will be distributed around a lot more than it was last year compared to the hyper-targeting that there was for a guy like Isaiah Page last year. So, unfortunately, not really much takeaways there out of Old Dominion outside of feel a little bit better about Colton Joseph. Probably don't spend any time looking at Old Dominion wide receivers, but I don't think any of you were anyway. So I think we're good to go there. All right, that pretty much brings us to the end of our show. I will say next week we are going to touch on a lot of those transfers as the spring portal window will be closing on Friday. And so hopefully we'll have landing spots for most of these guys and we'll have a pretty good idea as to exactly which players are involved and which ones are not. We will also have some more spring games. Miami of Ohio, East Carolina, Maryland, UAB, Northern Illinois, Penn State, Rutgers, Tulsa, Wyoming, Colorado State, Memphis, Oregon, San Jose State, South Florida, Arkansas State, and Louisiana Tech. I almost certainly will not be covering all of those, but definitely things calmed down compared to the last couple of weeks. So we'll probably cover the transfer portal guys and also these spring games as we finish up this spring season, and then we'll all be able to take a breather, enjoy the NFL draft, all of that good jazz. Yeah, but with all that being said, y'all, appreciate all of you guys listening. Again, if you want to be involved in the Tadpole Bowl, which is the Scott Fish Bowl version of the, or the college version of the Scott Fish Bowl, reach out to me on Twitter at @CFF_Jared if you want to get involved with that. I will send you the link to make sure you can get yourself signed up. But yeah, outside of that, thank you all for listening. If you have not already, make sure you leave the like, comment, and subscribe. If you're watching this on YouTube, and if you're on the podcast version, make sure you follow the show and leave a 5-star review wherever you can. Make sure you guys check out the rest of the Campus of Canton Podcast Network, where you can find shows ranging on pretty much anything you can think of related to the college fantasy game. We'll see you guys back here next Monday. Like I said, we'll finish up these spring games and we'll discuss a lot of these spring portal transfers. So until then, really appreciate all of you guys and hope you guys have a wonderful and blessed week. See y'all.